Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
In the early 90s, Derek Burleson and his wife lived in Rwanda, where they taught English at the National University. They were later evacuated when civil violence erupted. Burleson wrote a book of poems about his experience. The collection is called Ejo. Here's a poem that celebrates the rich culture Burleson saw when he first arrived in Rwanda.
Good customs. If you have a sweet potato, give half to your brother. Before serving guests a gourd of urguagua, sip through the straw yourself to show it's not poisoned. When you meet your neighbor in the market, shake hands and exclaim, "You're still alive." Wish him large herds when you part. When you plan to marry, present your future father with a hoe and a cow. Before bedding your husband, leave a pitcher of water for Liangombe, goddess of fecundity, since there's no greater sadness than dying with no grandchildren to mourn you. It's futile to fight the will of Imana. You're rubbed twice with butter, once when you're born, once when you die. Bury your first child's placenta under the bed. Wrap the umbilical cord into an amulet. When you need to know the future, take a bottle full of your own spit to the Umufumu, and he'll fry it to read the spirit's will. If a wife whistles, her husband is doomed. When someone sneezes, say, "Be rich." They'll answer, "Together." Harvest bananas before they ripen, or crows will eat them all. Attend Mass each Sunday. When you get home, sacrifice butter and beer at the ancestors' altars. Let only laughter scar your face.
It sounds like a place that you'd like to go, doesn't it?
Yeah. And at the same time, there's death everywhere you walk in Rwanda. Even in those early days, the greeting, for example, means you're still alive. Mara Museho translates literally into "you're still alive." So even that, these are sweet customs and things that I found very attractive about the place, death hovered just under the surface.
Were you in Rwanda when the genocide began?
No, the entire Peace Corps program in Rwanda was evacuated. The government felt they could no longer ensure the safety of the volunteers. And so our program ended at that time. And I left the country in March of 1993, almost a year to the day before the genocide began in 1994.
When the news began to leak out, did you believe it?
I was incredulous. I had returned to a teaching job in Kansas City at the time, and no, I couldn't believe it when I came home one day and on the news, there was news on the international news that the president's plane, the president of Burundi and Rwanda, had been on a plane together and their plane had been shot down. And that was sort of the marker or the signal that began the genocide. And quickly after that time, estimates run that 1 million people were killed in 100 days. I couldn't believe it. I was incredulous. While there had certainly been rumors while I lived in the country that plans like this were afoot, I certainly didn't know what to believe and what not to believe. So when the genocide came to pass in 1994, I was incredibly shocked.
You've written some poems about the brutality. Could you read one of those for us?
Sure. At the border, a pile of machetes and hoes higher than your head, most bloodstained. And every 30 seconds or so, another body pounds down Rusumo Falls. In the pool, at the bottom, they bob back and forth, so bloated and gray, you might think massacre had created a new race. Beyond the border, those farmers who piled these tools of food and war sit for days waiting for a kilo of beans. The rains begin again. It's that time of year. Nobody drinks from the river. On land, the bodies seem wings of laundry. Bright cloth spread on the Akagera bank to dry, flat as if the flesh inside were already sinking, eager for the river. In the water, these pale balloons float easily north to Lake Victoria, so putrid, even crocodiles stay away. Behind the border every day, while the gods hover like starving birds, Achilles still pursues Hector round the city walls and makes very sure when he catches up. He waits long enough to hear the voice pleading before he swings the blade.
What did you take away from your time in Rwanda and the events that followed?
I took two things away. I think, as you pointed out, there's a great deal of joy in these poems, and that joy is there because that's what I felt, to be in a new and wonderful place and meeting new and wonderful people, people that invited me into their homes and made me a part of their families. So those feelings of warmth toward the place and the people that live there continue for me. At the same time, I feel an incredible sense of loss for all of those wonderful people I knew who died in the genocide. Many of my colleagues and students at the university were killed, since the university was a particularly targeted place. The people who committed the genocide felt that intellectuals of any sort must be killed in order for the program of exterminating the Tutsis to go forward. So I feel both of those emotions still.
Could you leave us perhaps with one more poem? Home Again?
Home Again. April fools and snow the day we come back to ourselves in the Safeway cereal aisle. Frosted Flakes, Lucky Charms, we can't seem to choose among all the air-conditioned colors of boxes shelved under lights designed to make them glow. We've learned again how to accelerate through rush hour traffic down Kansas City freeways, crossing the Missouri each day into the neighboring state. Safe at home, we eat fast food each night and channel surf until sleep takes us on the sofa, blue tides of TV light lapping our knees. Then one morning, we wake to our local newsman saying, President Habyarimana's plane is still in flames on the runway, and all the next month we watch as our friends are murdered or murder.
Derek Burleson won the Felix Pollack Prize in Poetry for his collection about Rwanda called Ejo.